All right. Good evening, everyone.
Or should I say good morning to you?
Good morning.
It's more like morning. Or no?
How long have you been up now?
Yeah. Well, okay. So just to explain to everyone, I was just participating in the Backloggery fundraiser marathon. We do that almost every year. We skipped last year, but we do a fundraiser for the Backloggery.com site that I'm a part of. And we just did a stream marathon for about 20 hours. The donations determine how long we go. And we got enough to go about 20 hours. We've typically gone about 24 in the past, but we changed the scale hoping that we would not maybe quite go 24 to 30 hours like we have in the past. But we still broke the record. We played fewer hours, got closer to 24 than we meant to, and still got pretty good donations to cover backloggery.com side costs for the year. So it turned out really well. Anyone who watched that, thank you. We finished that about 6:30 this morning, and I went to bed and managed to get maybe 5-ish hours of sleep. So I'm pretty delirious right now. So apologies if I seem a little loopy or talking weirder than normal. Or less than normal, or maybe more than normal. I don't know what I'm going to do. In all actuality, I should not be the one streaming tonight because of all I've just gone through. But we're kind of up against some deadlines on some really cool things we're borrowing. And we're going to have to, you know, gather all of our material before their episodes, but I really wanted to stream with them because they are extremely unique devices, and just seemed like it would be a shame to not have an opportunity to stream with them. So we are joined tonight by... I guess we should call you Mike the Microphone. Is that your proper full name? Mike?
No, Mike.
Just Mike. Just Mike is
you,
fine.
No, my name is Michael Josephine Delacorde. Thank you very much. You just call me Mike. My name is Zach Libertini, though, but everybody knows me as Mike the Microphone.
All right. Well, and you're a full-time Twitch streamer.
I'm a full-time Twitch caster as well as a musician on YouTube.
All right. And you are generously loaning us actually the device that's playing in the very tiny top window of the screen there. You tweeted at our My Life in Gaming Twitter account several months ago saying, you know, you just had binged watched the RGB series or whatever, and you said, okay, now, you know, now to put this information to use, and obviously you've got a commitment to video quality on your channel, and you just made an offhand mention of that you were getting a Wide Boy 64 that week, and I was like, Wide Boy 64, where have I heard that word before? Looked it up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot this thing existed. And here we were planning a Game Boy RGB episode, which at this point is probably going to hit more like August, maybe hopefully the earlier side of August.
That is my birthday month. That is okay. That's a birthday present for me.
But yeah, it was going to be April. But I mean, the fact of the matter is we're borrowing so many things from so many people, these just really cool devices. That we were like, oh my gosh, we've got to get through all these episodes and do all, because all this stuff requires a lot of research, capturing a lot of material, comparing and understanding them, and we just haven't, it's just like, okay, what device am I going to be working on this week? So anyway, I was shocked that, I was just like, wow, that's really cool, I'd love to hear, what you find with it, and you're like, well, I'd love for you guys to look at this so you can give your input on it. And so,
when I got the thing, originally I had hit a wall with Game Boy Advance capture with my stream. One of the big things I had wanted to do was I was planning a huge Pokemon marathon that was going to encompass every generation of the games leading up to the new releases, which are now going to be Sun and Moon. So I'm going to be hating Pokemon by the time this month-long marathon is done, which I'm totally fine with. I'm absolutely fine with it. But the thing that I hit a wall with was that for whatever reason, I had ordered an action replay and an SD media launcher with the intent to try and force my Game Boy Advance player into 240p.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it was working. It would only force into 480p. And so I had tried to figure out different ways to get better quality out of my GBA games because the smeariness from the component was not jiving with me at all. And my alternatives were a Retron 5, which I was wholeheartedly against because I do not like the Retron series. As decent as they may be for some people, I can't stand them. And the other alternative was a Wide Boy that I had found on eBay that had been up since August of 2015.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. So it was just kind of sitting there because
they're expensive. They are pricey.
This one cost $1,080.
Wow.
And what's
all said and done.
What's cool about this one is I believe it's the rarer model. It's called the Wide Boy 64 AGB, which plays Game Boy Advance games. The other model, correct me if I'm wrong, does it do Game Boy Color or just regular Game Boy?
There are actually a total of six models of the Wide Boys in total. There are the Wide Boy GB editions, which only play Game Boy games. It doesn't do Game Boy Color palettes. There's the Wide Boy CBG, which does Game Boy Color games as well as Game Boy games. And then there's the Wide Boy 64 AGB. And then each of those variants comes with a developer ribbon cable slot, which you'll see on the front of the one that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And those were used to actually physically attach a console to the Wide Boy and use the console as a controller as opposed to using the Wide Boy itself as an emulator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me actually pop this out on my system. Because I definitely want to show it a little closer up. It's like a double tall N64 cartridge, basically. I mean, it really is. And what's funny about it is that you can tell that this is a product. You know, the story behind this is it was made for developers and the press, and this was never meant to.
Reviewers probably played
it. Yeah, it was never meant to be a retail product or anything that, you know, looked all that attractive. I mean, it looks cool to geeks like us, but you can see how. You've got this parallel port, or is that parallel? That's parallel port.
Yeah.
On the front. And
perpendicular.
Yeah, even and you can see in the cartridge slot, you can see a bit of bare board sort of behind there. Even the cutting, like around all of these openings, looks like it's done by hand. It's not the most professional. I mean, even the logo looks like kind of garbage. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, I was gonna say the label on it.
Yeah,
like somebody printed it off their
print. Just like all right, fancy text font. What do we have? Just stick it on something stock.
Yeah,
make it rainbow.
This is not the most professional looking thing that I've ever seen come out of Nintendo. It is, by the way. I don't know how well you can see there the Intelligent Systems logo.
They're the ones who developed it.
Yeah,
they're the only ones to this day who have been given a proper authorization by Nintendo to create proprietary carts like that for the N64.
Wow, that's crazy. And, you know, Intelligent Systems, you know, as many people here probably know, are the developers behind Paper Mario, Fire Emblem, Advance Wars, all that good stuff. So, yeah, it's
just cool that they're the ones that did it.
Yeah, it's did they not have a hand in making the Game Boy player? If I'm not mistaken, I might be making that up.
I feel like they did. Let me check.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume they did.
This is compatible. I mean, it's basically a Super Game Boy for your N64. And what's wild about that is, of course, obviously, it was never intended to be used with something like the Ultra HDMI. So, I mean, you can get some pretty crazy results out of this. And another thing is just sort of funny about the build quality of this whole thing is when you put the cartridge on, like, there's not even like a front into the cartridge slot.
It's like the full cart is on there.
It just hangs on there. It's so weird. It's so crazy.
So there is a thing with the sound, though.
Something I discovered, Mike, you sent this to Wes Almond, who is retrofixes.com, who is, you know, one of our go-to RGB mod system repair sort of guy. I mean, you know, he's really cool. And you were like, the audio on this thing isn't very good.
It sounded really washed out. Even with my mixer, I tried bumping the high and low ends to compensate for how awful it sounded. And it worked for a time, but it still didn't sound quite as right. It didn't have the full body that you would get out of, say, like the Game Boy Advance player. And I sent it off to Wes because he thought it might have been some of the audio receival caps inside the unit itself. Mm-hmm. And it turns out those were old as hell, and that wasn't exactly helping. But as you found out, it goes a little bit deeper.
Right. So I did a little research this week and asked. I actually directly asked Marshall, the guy that makes the Ultra HDMI. I said, "Why? I have an idea of why, but I'd rather hear it from you because you obviously probably know more about N64 hardware than probably anyone Nintendo still does." If I had my guess, it's probably true.
Ain't that the truth?
It's probably true. They probably have completely forgotten. I said, "Why? My guess was so okay." I don't think I clearly explained. The audio does not go over the HDMI when you're using this. But thankfully, the analog port when you're using Ultra HDMI is still active. So you can pull audio out from the AV out, which is what I'm going to be doing here for this stream. My theory was that this thing must somehow be doing its own audio encoding, and that passes straight through to the AV out. And I'm probably not technically correct when I say it just passes it straight to the AV out, but more or less it never is in the digital domain once it leaves this thing. I think what Marshall said was that a few of the pins support and just, you know, analog audio or video. There's actually a 64DD cartridge, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, me and Corey, I think, saw when we were at G Anime in Canada, where they were doing a demonstration of the 64DD. And there's a capture card. There's a capture card for the 64DD. I never knew
that. Is there really? Just like a dedicated capture card?
A composite capture card that you put on it's a cartridge you put on top. It's got these inputs on it.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that. It just has the ports and you just plug it right in. I've seen those.
It's wild. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if the guy actually had it because he did several 64DD demos. I can't remember if that was one of the things he had or if he just showed it as part of his slides. But it was a really fascinating presentation, even though it was in French and we couldn't understand it until they translated it for us. But it was really fun.
Waiting for the subtitles to come out. This is so great, I'm sure.
It's kind of wild. So this Ultra HDMI can't see this because it takes its audio directly from the digital source on the system hardware. So right now, the way I've got this wired up, I've got the audio going to my mixer, but you'll hear how it sounds. I'm going to go ahead and.
Oh, you switched it up so you could still hear the audio.
I put it directly. I took an extra AV out and put it directly into my mixer.
It's a good idea.
You know, unfortunately, you guys on Skype can't hear this, but it just sounds really low, just sort of tinny. And the thing that initially came to mind was it sounds like a Game Boy speaker. It sounds like a Game Boy speaker coming out of your sound system or your headphones. And when I thought of it, it actually kind of appealed to me a bit. I was like, oh, you know, maybe was this intentional? Maybe they're actually trying to go for something here, you know?
Man, if you played on a PVM, I'm sure it would be the full experience.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it's definitely a weaker sound, but the more I've listened to it, I'm kind of okay with it. But that's definitely the area, and there's just not a lot of. There's really no YouTube videos about this thing. I mean, there are. I found one video of this guy shooting a camera of it, and you couldn't learn anything about it from that video.
Was it the guy swapping through, like, three games?
I forget. Something like that. Like, the camera was just sitting down. It looked like it was just, like, in an office or something. And it didn't tell you anything about it, really. but it's just not a very well-documented device. There's just not a lot of information out there. And, you know, I stream at a lower bit rate than Corey does, and unfortunately I'm on 720p because my internet doesn't always play nice with YouTube, but it looks like it's doing okay right now.
It's got a good workout recently.
But, it's got this border, this gray border. You can see a little dithering. I don't know if you can see it very well. You might see some sort of horizontal lines. Which is a little bit of dithering.
Hit Z.
Z?
Yes.
I don't see anything happening when I hit Z.
Usually what happens is there's a weird type of alignment in the way that the wide boy handles pixel arrangement by zooming, and that's adjusted by pressing Z. So if you zoom in and if you zoom in and press Z, you'll see the difference between what I call the analog zoom and the digital zoom. All the digital version does is it force scales the pixels together, that's the version that you want because it perfectly aligns everything.
Okay, so I'll explain that. If you hold the stick, I mean, you've obviously figured out a few things I haven't. If you hold the stick up, you can do this zoom, which you can see how when I zoom it up, you can see even on the stream like how atrocious the scaling is, because you have to keep in mind this is 240p scaling up a sub 240p image, and there's just a lot it can do with it, and it looks like garbage.
Right. Yeah.
So, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I think this is doing is it's essentially toggling anti-aliasing on and off.
That actually would make a crap load of sense. Wow. But it kind of doesn't, though, because it's force scaling pixels together in like this weird, muddied.
Yeah.
Like line doubling it.
See like there's like three different modes. It's very. The two blurry looking ones, I see that there's a very subtle difference that you probably can't even tell on the stream. But yeah, when you hit Z, that's crazy.
It makes it look a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, the scaling is still very uneven. But when you zoom out, it doesn't look like there's any obvious differences. Oh, wait, yeah, there is a difference. There is a difference, yeah. That is interesting. It's very subtle when it's zoomed out.
Let me tell you a horrible story about that little device. When I first got it, I played Pokemon Yellow on the 20th anniversary day of Pokemon. And throughout the entirety of the game, the text box was just below that line where the Z button would realign the pixels. And so all of my text had this weird, like, unaligned shadowing to it. And it was just I played like that for 2 days before I accidentally hit the Z button and saw it fix itself.
That's a great tip.
You're like, thank God.
Those are the only real, if you hit R and what is that? Oh, I think this only applies to Game Boy and Game Boy Color games. If you hit R and L, it does a horrible stretch, which I don't know why you would do, but it's there. It's there. It's a feature. That is fascinating. And then, of course, you know, on top of this, we've got the Ultra HDMI. I've got the VID blur turned on. Of course, it could be off. And of course, we could you know, if we wanted, we could load retro mode here, which would
scanlines on it.
This is going to look terrible on the stream if it even appears, but it actually looks kind of neat. It does look kind of neat in person, at least. You can adjust the scanline depth.
Doesn't look too bad.
Ultra HDMI.
Yeah, well, if you zoomed it up, it might look pretty decent, actually.
I zoomed it in the FrameMeister. Yeah,
there it goes.
And of course, that is one nice thing. Of course, you've unfortunately got this border, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
So you can't turn it off.
Actually, hold on. And once I'm in here, I can, you know, if as long as you're not using integer scales, you can do a little, you can play with the scanline scaling a bit in the Ultra HDMI. I think I have HDMI direct. Oops. HDMI direct is on. That means pass through. That means what you're seeing, the FrameMeister, is not processing at all.
Yeah, it's just sending it straight through.
Mm-hmm. It'll take a second for that to appear. Oh, and I actually was playing around a little bit earlier, and you can see I've actually got pretty decent. It probably looks like garbage on the stream the way the scan lines are. But, you know, you can use the FrameMeister to zoom it up a little bit if you wanted, you know, because the FrameMeister does take HDMI inputs. Let's go back to my normal settings, which don't involve scan lines because they look bad on stream. Turn gamma boost off. That's really, as far as I can tell, more of a scan line sort of thing. I use an integer plus with VID blur. I'll just turn it to always for now. I'm not looking at it through the FrameMeister on my TV, so I don't see the zoom, but that looks pretty good right there. There's that Z button.
I'll have
thing,
to wait for it.
But
I'm waiting for it. It looks pretty good right now.
And of course, you know, the N64 has a pretty good D-pad, so, you know, this is actually
doable.
Not a bad way to play it.
I just like the definition of the pixels. I've always been a sucker for that.
It looks.
Oh yeah, there it is.
And of course, you know, you can play it on PVM, and it's got scan lines in, you know, the correct places, and that's why the border exists, because it's the GBA resolution is sub 240p.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, same thing with the Super Game Boy, you know. There, much as I hate the borders, there is a reason for them. That's why we use the FrameMeister to try to get around
to
them.
To grab them out.
Yeah. The Pixel Purist, who we definitely want to feature his work more thoroughly in the future, who makes the FrameMeister profiles we really like. I sent him my stuff for loading the Game Boy interface, because I was like, I really want some Game Boy interface profiles. Will you help build these if I send them to you? And, you know, he's like, I mean, he does it like a night and makes these perfect integer scale profiles for the Game Boy Player, and they look really good. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not as sharp as this, but it's also a heck of a lot more affordable.
Yeah,
you know what? Anytime somebody asks me, would you recommend buying a Wide Boy, I tell them flat out, if you have money to burn, absolutely. Yeah. In any other circumstance, no.
Yeah, I mean, just it's true for like a lot of this stuff, you know, like, you know, you gotta be really into it to like,
yeah,
wanna,
I mean, that's
wanna do it.
That's why you know, when people are kind of confused sometimes about like the videos, like some people are like, you didn't say what the best thing was. And it's like, well, what's the best for our setup might not be the best for your setup, or maybe you're willing to spend more money or less money, or, you know, it's totally dependent on each person's individual setup and needs, and, you know, so we're just like, here are all these options, but we're not necessarily telling you the one definitive answer.
Right.
And even with this, you know, this would possibly be the definitive answer if it wasn't for the sound thing. You know, I, like I say, the more I listen to this, I'm kind of getting into this tinny, authentic, I call it authentic Game Boy sounding speaker.
you also have it passed through a mixer into some nice headphones, so that's just adding to the full surround sound mono experience.
It's I'm kind of into it. I'm coming around to the sound on this thing. The only thing I wish was you could turn off the border. If you could turn off that border, it would be pretty perfect.
The one thing that I'm able to do, or that you can do through OBS, especially for streaming, and I use the XRGB Zoom to kind of counteract this on my end, but since my stream typically gets a different capture, I'm able to just crop the window down perfectly in OBS type of thing. And then for my monitors, I'm able to just kind of zoom in. Thank God this PVM has that function. Overscan is great.
So you you stream with a PVM.
Mm-hmm.
You pass it through.
Yeah, I have a really, really complicated setup, arguably one of the best on Twitch.
Nice. Did you get a chance to see our setup video?
I did, yeah. I saw both of your setups, and it's actually because of your guys' setup that I was able to figure out how to do a lot of the routing and bypassing for this. Because mm-hmm. the way that my setup works is I have like raw HDMI input for all of my HDMI consoles. I have all of my component games passed through the FrameMeister. All 14 or 15 consoles I have running here passed through the FrameMeister. And on top of that, anything with a SCART output is routed through SCART to BNC cables into the PVM, and then the PVM has BNC pass-through, so I go BNC to SCART for my XRGB.
Nice. Okay, so that's what Tri used to do. I passed through to two PVMs, and then I used that last one to go out to a SCART to component, and then into my bigger CRT. For the heck of it, but yeah, I mean that's a great way to, I'm not sure if you are familiar or not, but Jeremy Parrish,
name does not ring a bell.
He's on Retronauts, and we used to work for 1UP.com. He's like done a bunch of stuff, but he has been doing this series called Good Intentions, where he's like, you know, having high quality capture of NES games, and you know, he wanted to capture a bunch of Duck Hunt stuff, and that's the way you do it. You know, you run it through a PVM, you can use the light gun, and then capture that output.
That's probably the most exciting aspect of getting a PVM that I got, because I ended up getting a Sony 20 M2 MDU.
Oh, that's...
Is that what you have? Try.
The 20 M... No, I've got the 13.
Yeah,
but the MD one is, if I'm not mistaken, were those like marketed more toward like medical purposes?
Yeah, actually the 20
inch.
Yeah, it's white. It was it's actually funny you say that. It was a hospital surplus buy that I got. I ended up getting it for 200 flat.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a place maybe an hour and a half from me, and they have got a ton of them. And I've been
really?
I'm going to Tri's place middle of July, because we're going to be working on a super secret episode, and we're going to like take a drive out to this place that has all these PVMs.
I hope they can the thing is like they are not very responsive when I try to just contact them. So I hope they'll just like let you walk in and like look at their
just
stuff.
Pick one up.
Yeah, I mean it looks like they've got a ton of they've got some others, but they're like a medical reseller, and like they've got all of these listed on their website, and I don't know, like I really want a 20 inch. Unfortunately, now correct me if I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, that model does not have 480p support.
Right. No, it does not.
Yeah.
Well, that I cannot confirm that. I've been told, yes, it does. The issue that I've had is that any attempts I've had at getting component processed to 15 kilohertz signal has failed. I bought an X-Select D4 with the intention of going from component to RGB D-sub out and then RGB D-sub to SCART so that I could play my component games on my PVM monitor, but unfortunately that converter only converts it to 31 kilohertz as opposed to 15, which is needed for this monitor.
Right.
So what you can do and what I'm going to be doing is I've pre-ordered and I'm waiting on a Garo to come in, and Garo does component to SCART RGB 15 kilohertz conversion. And it's from the same guys who made the Toro converter for the Dreamcast.
Cool.
Barbeos, yeah.
Do you know when it's supposed to be out?
They're taking pre-orders through June, and then they're going to start making and shipping, I believe.
How much does it run?
It's $85. It's flat.
That's not bad.
The only thing is that it needs a 12-volt adapter, and it does not come with it. You have to order that separately.
Oh, that's okay, though. You can find something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not a problem. And I'm getting that just so that I can play, because I speedrun Luigi's Mansion, and I really want to have it on my CRT, just because that would help immensely with the depth perception in certain areas.
Mm. So you do a lot of stuff in the speedrunning community as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do speedrunning, casual play, and high-quality capture are my things.
Oh, nice. It's a good trio.
Yeah, a lot of people come to me for microphone and video quality advice on Twitch, and I feel really good about that. And thankfully, you guys have actually been a big reason that I've been able to learn most of that, just because your RGB Master Series has probably been like my biggest source of information for a lot of video quality stuff. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's just too bad we can't get them out faster.
Honestly, they're worth the wait. It's like a present every month when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, we were, at the beginning of this year, or even last year, we were saying, like, we need to do one a month. And it's been tough to hit that. And I think at some point we'll be able to hit that, but right now it's just been really challenging.
Yeah, I mean, we were in it for, like, and we're in that zone for a while, but this year it's just, like, with the amount of, like, freelance work we've kind of picked up, and, you know, my wife went to work full time, so I'm like, I work freelance, but the rest of the time I'm like stay at home dad.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of stuff has kind of made it difficult.
And oh, absolutely.
For some reason, our episodes keep on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm working on this, like, we were supposed to have an episode out this weekend, and we were like working on it pretty seriously, like both of us.
Yeah.
Like it was supposed to be easy.
that's how we all.
And somehow I think it might be the most complex episode I've ever edited. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I think those
are your famous last words, right?
Yeah, that's what we say every time.
Like
I was certainly not expecting like this.
I think another reason, you know, we've had a little bit of a hard time doing RGB every month is because we're also doing this tips and tweaks series, which is what the next episode is going to be part of. It's going to be on. I think we've already said, I can say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on controller adapters.
Which might not seem like that interesting, but I think we cover five different adapters in the whole thing.
Like, really in depth. Like,
yeah.
And show, like, how you can do some kind of unique things with them beyond just, you know, I'm using, you know, this kind of controller on my PlayStation, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's what we try to do. Is we try to, you know, give some extra value, I guess, to.
But, and hopefully, you know, people appreciate those, you know, even if it means that, you know, sometimes it might put another week or two behind on RGB episode. I mean, at this point, we really see, like, the game-focused episodes as, like, our reprieve.
Our break.
Because they're
like, after this,
comparatively
like,
so much easier to do.
Episode.
Like, I know the game. It's going to be so easy. I can just talk about it, and people will love it.
And it's just, you don't really have to, you just cut in game footage. You don't really have to shoot anything.
Like, it had been so long since I'd done a game-focused episode when I did the Conquer episode in, was it March?
It was April.
April. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I forgot how quick it comes together when most of the video is just like throwing in clips of a game that you've already played through and recorded the whole thing.
Yeah, and there's like action happening. You know,
and you know where it is too.
Reading that action. Yeah.
Like you don't have to make. You don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to hunt down the good takes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean this episode, like the controller adapter, somehow it is like gonna be like 38 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know how it happened.
There were a lot of factors.
We were really pushing. We really wanted to have it out this weekend. And we kind of decided on Friday that.
For several reasons. Like, the first thing that came to mind was we were like, do we really want to compete with E3? Like, is the video just going to get lost and never be viewed? The other thing was, like, there were at least two sections in the video where we're like, this could be a lot better. Like, it needs to be expanded upon and kind of.
And you had kind of an issue with one of your things.
Right, so and I got that resolved, and I have a much better idea of how to approach that issue now.
Yeah, that's like the most, like the newest thing to cover in it. And a lot of people have probably heard of it, is that the wireless receiver for the NES.
Yeah.
I have not heard of that one.
It's like a joint thing between Analog NT, the people who make the Analog NT, and 8-bit Do. Where you can use like Wiimotes and DualShock 3s and stuff with your NES.
Wow.
Yeah, it's basically like a NES controller port that has the controller hacked off. It's what it looks like. I mean, it looks pretty authentic. Except it's just got like a sync button on the front.
It's funny you said that just because all I could see in my mind when you said wireless NES controller was the NES satellite, the old infrared setup
I've never used, but I'm sure it's awful.
It's as terrible as I have the Activision infrared SNES controllers, and those don't function unless you're pointing it directly at the IR sensor, and it's
probably
terrible.
Laggy, I would assume.
I wonder if it's better than the Supersonic.
I have no frame of reference, although I can tell you the worst N64 controller of all time. And it is the Power Quest Glove 64, and it's
the Power Quest Glove.
You've never seen? I have one. Hold on.
Yeah, let's see it.
Oh man, hold on. You're in for three.
I can't believe it is. So it's a glove.
I didn't know the N64 had a glove.
Me either. We had up to 180 people at one point.
Wow,
watching it. It's like a new record.
That's definitely a new record.
So this is the Power Quest Glove 64.
Oh, wow. That is obnoxious.
It's pretty bad. So let me show you how this bad boy functions. You have to strap it onto your forearm and your hand. Go ahead and put it in just like that. Get yourself locked in there. I call this carpal tunnel simulator for a reason. So all of your buttons are right there. You have your Z button, your L and R buttons, your C buttons, A, B buttons, and start button, and your D-pad's up here. And all of your controller movement is left, right, up, and down. And the neutral position is finicky as all get at, and the only game that I've ever even seen this be useful for is Star Wars Episode I Pod Racers. And that is because I maintain what you could do with this. You could get a right-handed one and a left-handed one and do the little up-down joystick mode for the racers and just sit there squatted down like you're running, man, doing all this pod racing all this pod racing stuff. It'd be great. That is what I call pod racing, personally.
That's crazy. I've never even heard of it.
It's an awful off-brand. They made a PlayStation 1 variation exactly like it. It's called the Power Quest Glove.
That's pretty amazing. That could be like a. Maybe we can get a gaming historian to do a documentary on it.
I'm pretty sure whatever caused that thing to exist has got to be less interesting than the Power Glove. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, we traced it back to the Mad Catz era, a very rare off-brand, not made by any particular brand in question, but an oddity nonetheless.
That's pretty good. Good voice.
Thank you. I do voiceover work in my free time. I'm trying to get into that a little bit more seriously.
Oh, that's cool. What have you done?
So far, well, I'm not joking when I say this, and this is my fun little bit of embarrassment, but also something I'm very proud of. I actually helped do vocals for the Pac-Man theme song on the Disney XD cartoon.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm very happy about that. I also do the voice of a couple of characters in a VR game coming out called Private Eye.
Oh, cool.
And I'm also currently auditioned and hopefully going to get cast in a couple of other projects that I can't talk about.
That's cool.
So that Pac-Man thing, is that the Pac-Man series that there's like a couple of Wii U games I wanted to think based on that?
Yeah, the weird 3D animated one.
Yeah.
My daughter watched like an episode of it and she didn't really like it. She's like was like three at the time. There's no frame of reference of Pac-Man for her to be like, oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, like I kind of get that.
I saw the 8-bit Duke in the chat room. And I know he's a fan of the old Pac-Man cartoon.
Yeah, it's a big. You know, I did some voice acting.
Oh yeah, you did. Do you even know if your voice is in the game?
I don't know. I never heard it. I did some like people on the street dialogue in L.A. Noir.
One of the guys that you accidentally nick with a car.
Yeah, I don't even remember what my lines were, but it was kind of cool. You know, I got to go to like Rockstar's office.
That's
in New York.
That's outstanding, though.
And check it out. It was pretty cool. But I have no idea. My name's in the credits, along with like a million other people. What
is it really,
really funny is that a friend of mine, like I never really talked to him about it, and then I like mentioned it. I was like, oh, you know, like. Because when it was coming out, I was like, there was like an ad for it. I was like, oh, I got to do like little, like people in the streets. Like, oh, me too. And his name is in the credits. Like, his last name starts with a C as well. And it's like three names after mine.
Alex.
Like, we had no idea that the other person even did it.
Just one of those random happenstances. And you're like, what a coincidence.
Yeah. But it's cool. It's cool, like, going to the place and stuff. But. Certainly not as interesting or cool as the stuff you've done.
No, I recorded all of that in my bedroom next to the futon.
I mean, that's actually kind of awesome that you were able to just do it at home.
Yeah.
My room is a studio. I have wall-to-wall padding, all of my audio equipment.
What kind of soundproofing do you have in there?
Yeah, I have egg crate foam wall-to-wall.
Oh, wow.
I can actually, here, I'll show you my setup if I can get this working. Fun fact, you can turn your iPhone into a portable webcam.
Oh!
If I can get this working, let's find out. One moment. Yes, I can. Excellent.
How do you do it?
There's an app you can get called EpocCam. And then there's a desktop browser variant for it, and it just connects via Wi-Fi.
Do I need to, accept a new video? Because your thing went away.
Yeah, just one moment. I have to set this up so that it won't randomly shut off. There we go. All right, so should be good now.
Oh, there you go.
Looks like something's loading.
It did for a second, then it stopped loading.
Uh-oh, it went away. Hold on, let me do one thing. Give me a second.
Nope,
did he just hang up?
Yeah.
That's all right. Fine. He's good. He's right. Back.
Yeah, sorry. I had to duck in and duck out. Deciding not to work for whatever reason. I think it might just be... Oh, wait. What? Maybe?
A widescreen thing starting to load.
Yeah, no, it's not going to... I guess it's not going to work for this. That's all right.
It is what it is. But that's cool. I might check that out.
Yeah, it works well on stream, but I have soundproofing in here, a dynamic microphone, the whole nine.
Is your regular webcam back?
Oh yeah, hold on, let me do that. I have to reset it in order to get the webcam icon to turn back on.
I don't see it yet.
There you go.
There we go.
There he is.
That's right.
I'm not doing too good. Of course, I'm pretty out of practice at this game. I was actually kind of surprised. I don't know if Corey ended up using it, but I record a little record a little footage of this game for the new episode. And I was surprised. Like,
this was generally like really disliked, isn't it?
I mean, I consider it my least favorite Mario Kart, but I was kind of surprised. Like, it feels a lot better than I thought I remembered. I mean, I'm doing bad now, obviously, but it definitely felt like, you know what? If I got back into this game, I could probably do okay with it. Like, it feels no worse than the Super Nintendo game, which, sadly, in my opinion, I don't think it's aged that well in terms of control, but...
No, especially if you have an older controller. The D-pads get
bad. Yeah, I mean, I've got a... A few years ago, I got so put out with trying to find, a good used Super Nintendo controller, or a passable knockoff. So yeah. I just bought a brand new in-box Super Nintendo controller because I'm like, hey, okay, it costs a little bit more money.
Aren't they?
Well, it wasn't super obnoxious at the time, maybe $30, $40, but I bet they're a lot more now.
I actually hit a wall with my 3DS where I didn't want to wear down the gamepad, so I got a controller mod put on it that allows me to attach a GameCube controller.
Oh, awesome. Serious? Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
I might need to talk to you about, you know what, have I already asked you some questions before about,
Busted arm and a leg is the only problem.
3D. Wait 6 months.
Yeah, right. I'm actually looking to get a regular DS capture, pretty soon. Like, I want to do both because the regular DS will let you do Game Boy Advance, and mainly I want to do that, like, partly for comparison purposes for the Game Boy episode.
Yeah.
The thing I hate about that stuff though is it's like it's over USB, like there's no like real video output.
Yeah. Handhelds are fickle.
If you could play it like on a regular TV, that'd be really sweet.
The closest you're going to get is a viewer program, unfortunately.
And you can play full screen.
Yeah. The cool part about the DS one is that you can separate the screens and have them on different monitors, so Persona Q is a pretty fun experience.
Oh.
Okay. Were doing that today. I was when I stopped in your Kirby stream. You had bottom screen, like, in the lower left-hand corner.
Mm-hmm. With the Katsu Kitty model, the one that I have here, you can separate the top and bottom screen and then scale them separately to how you want them to fit. And so I have the individual windows on one of my monitors, and then it's individually cropped and set up on my layout.
Nice. That's seems like the best way to do it, really.
I'm going to...
You have Switch games?
Yeah, real quickly, I want to... I want to show how... I don't know why I'm talking while I'm that far away. I want to show how the regular Game Boy games, it's basically, I guess, a Game Boy Color in there, in the unit, because it loads the color schemes in the same way, where, you know, you hold a certain direction, or A or B, to choose the color scheme for Game Boy games that don't have the don't have any preset thing. Which the shame of it all is that Super Game Boy color schemes have never been available on any of Nintendo's official methods. Even this, which is a shame because I always thought that the Super Game Boy color schemes were some of the best. I mean, obviously, you know, Game Boy Color is better, like Game Boy Color Decade games, but it's so much better than anything you can do with a original Game Boy or Super Game Boy game on a Game Boy Color.
Yeah. One of the big things about the Wide Boy that I ended up finding out is that in terms of specs and mechanics across all of its internals, it's pretty much identical to the Game Boy Advance player, which leads me to believe that this actually might have been a prototype before they made the GBA player, since it was developed around the same time.
Mm. Here, actually, let me. I don't want to play this for too long, so let me just go straight to hard and see how badly I do. This is my favorite Game & Watch game, the Manhole. Which normally you hear people say like fire. Or, well, not that people talk about their favorite Game & Watch games, but.
Yeah, man, get into arguments online about what your favorite Game & Watch game is.
Like, I definitely didn't really expect to like this when I first played it, but I was like, man, this is, like, really addictive. Oh, man. No, I'm doing pretty bad. But, Toad's face is green up there.
Remember to hit Z and it'll realign the pixels.
Oh, is it? Oh, so you have to do that every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a safe thing. That's the awful part.
Good tip. Oh man, this is going bad.
Forget it.
Actually, I might like Chef a little better, to tell you the truth, which is on I think Game & Watch Gallery.
Manhole looks stressful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm playing hard like, mode man. Here, so.
I'm just watching you let these poor people die.
Oh, they're just getting dirty. Chef is actually really fun, though. I didn't even get to 100. But just for the sake of showing it, I'm also going to pop in a Game Boy Color exclusive. I don't have a whole lot of those, and this is one that I actually have not played the Game Boy Color version of before, so this will be interesting. I don't expect it to necessarily be that good, but hang on.
Only Game Boy Color game I have is Pokemon Crystal.
Oh, that's the only Game Boy I think the only one I have is Link's Awakening DX.
Well, but that's not
that's
exclusive.
That's a Game Boy Color game?
Yeah.
Not
the DX is.
Yeah, it's not exclusive, though.
Well, I mean... Like
you can't play Crystal on, like, a Super Game Boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, this cannot be played on a regular Game Boy.
Adam Zay, we are closing in on 30,000 subs. I think that we're hoping that we make it before too many games, which is a week and a half, like a little bit over, make almost a little bit less than 2 weeks.
This is really funny. That's empty. That's really funny how the file select is actually from Donkey Kong 64.
Oh, wow. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a JPEG shot. Oh, my goodness.
Do I look like I know what a JPEG is?
That's pretty good.
Hank Hill.
Which is also just is like basically like every voice that Mike Judge does.
Judge and Patrick Warburton, one voice, multiple characters.
Well, this is kind of wild. This is the first level, but that arrangement, this structure with that vulture that was dropping things on me, that is not from the first level, but there is something like that on another level. And
this is, you're working on a...
Well, not really.
Video of Donkey Kong Country.
Not really. I mean, that's the reason I have this. I grabbed it at MAGFest. I want to do like a
try his very strong opinions on Donkey Kong Country. if you start talking about Donkey Kong Country Returns, he like when it first came out, he had to like write. It's like, I have to write something down about this. He wrote this really long blog about like why. You didn't like it.
I mean, if you know our show, you'll know that like generally we're saying like positive things, and we're always like looking for the good in the game, et cetera, et cetera. And you know we're just like not ranters or anything. And
felt betrayed.
I was so mad about Donkey Kong Country Returns. I'm ready to give it a second shot though. I played through the whole game for the record. But I was mad about it. But I've also played through like half of Tropical Freeze against my will. It was.
And you liked it a little bit more.
I liked it more, but I don't know if it was just because I was playing co-op and it was, you know, co-op makes you laugh. Oops.
I feel like co-op makes a lot of bad games bearable, though. Like,
yeah.
Dead Space 3 was a big one for me.
Yeah, we played, Corey and I played Dead Space together.
But I mean, I wonder if we only liked it because we played co-op.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I tried playing the single player experience and it was just, it was dry and unfulfilling. Anytime you accomplished something, it didn't feel good because you struggled infinitely with it. And then once you actually managed to overcome it, you didn't really have a reward, so to speak. So what was the point?
Right.
Now, the controls in this are definitely throwing me for a little bit of a loop. But yeah, I want to do, I don't know, I'd love to say it will happen this year. I don't know for sure, but like definitely want a big thing that I want to do is a just like full series blowout showcase on Donkey Kong Country and why I think it is like basically the perfect platforming series.
That would be outstanding, and I would honestly pay to see that. Just so I can see you bring up the games that you don't like of the series.
I mean,
comparison.
You know, who knows? I mean, I might change my mind because I know what to expect now.
Yeah.
That way you're not going in with expectations.
I was going in with the expectations. Like, I was reading interviews from Retro that were like, oh yeah, you know, we had everyone go home and play the whole original trilogy and so they could understand what made it so great and we're trying to really recreate that feel. And I'm like, oh man, like, because I felt like at the time I was the only person who was still saying Donkey Kong Country was great. Like, I thought, like, most people, like, the prevailing attitude was like, you know what, those games were really just all about the graphics, and they aren't actually very good. And I'm like, no, they're amazing. Like, you don't understand. Like, the level design is, like, perfect, and
level of intricacy with the platforming and the level of technical skill that you need to solve certain things and the level of fulfillment.
And so I was like, all right, like, Retro gets it. They're going to do these games right, and it ended up being like a completely different control feel, totally different level design. Like it was they recycled the music and had the look like Donkey Kong Country. I was like, no, you're saying you made this like Donkey Kong Country on a superficial level. Like it's. No, yeah, this is not how Donkey Kong Country plays.
Donkey Kong Country.
This is not how Donkey Kong Country plays because the Game Boy games never felt right.
I honestly feel like that's a trend with Nintendo nowadays, though. We're going to make you a spiritual successor and that we're going to have an entirely different gameplay mechanic, but keep the name and keep the design.
Mm. Right. Star Fox.
Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon.
Yeah. Which I thought was really good. It's just, it was way too long.
The mission setup really bothered me. It really kind of staggered the way that the game progressed. Because, I mean, with Luigi's Mansion, it was, you know, go, 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 go. And you could, you know, mark your little save intervals. But for the most part, it was one continuous string.
Mm-hmm.
And with Dark Moon, it kept making you stop and go back.
Right.
Select the next part. And then stop and go back. Select the next part.
And that was a bad game. It just like, yeah, it was not nearly as good.
It was maybe one mansion too long.
Yeah, well, like 10 hours too long.
Yeah. I feel like a couple of the dog missions, especially the dog ghost missions.
Oh, yeah.
Those were just in there to make you go back through terrain that you had already explored, you know, extend the longevity of certain mansions.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was by, what are they called? Next Level? Is that the one they're called?
Yeah. I think yeah, it's them. They made, I'm pretty sure they're the ones that made Punch Out, yeah.
Which was excellent.
I have Mike Tyson's Punch Out on my NES, and I'm still trying to get a copy of Super Punch Out.
That's getting a little rare, isn't it? I forget.
Well, I mean, it's like $30 now.
Yeah.
They're like everything.
I did not expect.
Like at least $30 now.
I did not expect Super Punch-Out to be as good as
Super Punch Out or the or just Punch Out?
The Super Punch Out. Like I was like, a few people told me they were like, no, Super Punch Out is actually like really good, and I'm like, no. I mean, there's no way it can be as good as the original. Like, just can't be.
And it has its own charm to it. It really does.
It's good. It is good. I remember when I got Super Nintendo kind of late, and I got a Christmas Night 4. I got Donkey Kong Country along with a couple other games with my Super Nintendo, and the little piranha fish in this level. You know, obviously not this version, but I just remember thinking they looked totally real, completely 100% real. I was like, it is not going to get any better than how good this piranha fish looks. It's just not.
It's funny that like that was the thing, the piranha fish.
There's a few missing levels here.
Oh yeah, I mean I guess that's pretty expected.
Yeah, and size the limitations. The level designs are not quite
as intricate.
Well, it is not quite a port. It's definitely taking its own liberties with it, which really not that. Unlike the Donkey Kong Land games, which are... Well, the first Donkey Kong Land is kind of its own thing, but the second and third... Which actually... I have played the third. I haven't actually played the second yet, but from what I know about it, it's, you know, closer to a retelling of Donkey Kong Country 2 than... Or N3 than unique games of their own. I mean, Donkey Kong Land 1 has, you know, the flying pigs. I mean, that's, you know, that's not Donkey Kong Country.
So are you about ready to...
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to show the full breadth of the things that you could... Because, I mean, it's just unique playing Game Boy Color games... Game Boy Advance games on the N64. I mean, when the Game Boy Advance came out, like, the N64 was pretty much finished.
It was, interestingly enough, the Wide Boy was developed during the gap period of games for the N64, where titles like, I believe it was Paper Mario and the Thousand Year Door and Luigi's Mansion, stuff like that, were actually, Animal Crossing even, were being developed for the N64. Mm-hmm. And then those titles were either Japan-only releases or were later pushed over to the GameCube due to the shift.
Yeah, and, you know, Intelligent Systems wasn't really, like, it's become, you know, starting with Game Boy Advance, GameCube, and up to now, Intelligent Systems has become a very well-renowned developer here. But at the time, like, they did Paper Mario, but otherwise not much of what they did actually... came out here.
Yeah, I actually, most of the games that Intelligent has done and a lot of the Japan-only releases that never made it over here, I've actually ended up getting as physical reproduction cards for the sole purpose of playing on the Wide Boy.
Why isn't this 60 frames? Because my internet is doesn't play as nice with YouTube as Corey's does. So that's why. So anyway, and also because we're playing Game Boy games, like, who cares?
If a Game Boy game operates at 60 FPS, I'll be astonished.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the technical specs of what it is capable of, but I don't think... If there are games that run 60, I am... again, these are things I need to do a little research on, but games sure as heck don't look 60 to me, but I don't know. Anyway, this is the next thing we're looking at. Mostly looks like a regular original Game Boy. It's got a Super Nintendo port dangling off the bottom. It's also got...
A Super Nintendo
controller port dangling off the bottom.
Was it? Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was NES only.
Maybe some of the earlier prototypes. I don't know. I've seen pictures like that. But you can see here, I don't know if this is final to how the look will be. You can see that there's this line right along the middle where they have fattened up the fat Game Boy a little bit.
They cut it in half and then
It's a sandwich.
Game Boy peanut butter sandwich, it looks like. That's some thick peanut butter. And on the side here, there's a couple of buttons added, and on the top, there is a mini HDMI port. This is called, I don't know exactly 100% sure for sure how I'm supposed to be saying this, but HD My Boy. You know, that's
HDMI Boy.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe it's HDMI Boy, or if you're saying HD My Boy. I don't know whether you're... Am I asking these people who make this, am I saying, hey, HD My Game Boy? Or am I saying, why, yes, that's HD My Boy? I mean, I don't know.
Back in my days, all we had was analog, but thanks to modern-day technology, the glory of my day comes to you.
Yeah, so I don't know. But anyway, so this is the main reason this stream is happening now, because they have someone else that needs to look at this prototype soon. So I am gathering the last bits of material and video shots and direct record footage of this that I'm going to need for the episode, because I'm not going to have it in my hands when I am actually editing the episode. I just thought it would be really a shame to not stream with this and the Wide Boy while I've got my hands on them. So here we are. So right now I actually just have batteries in it, but obviously you could use the AC adapter. It's funny, the
I wonder if it goes through batteries any faster.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
I would guess so, since it probably has to siphon a little bit more.
I don't know for sure. It's got a little port added here. This is probably a pretty temporary function, because I noticed when I was when I was trying to when I was first testing it, as I was trying to switch cartridges, I was like, why does my finger feel funny when I touch this thing? And I was like, oh, there's like electricity like pulsing through this communications port. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I should like put this cable that came with the thing. Maybe I should just like put that in it and like keep it in there so I don't accidentally touch it anymore.
Oh god, or if it touches something else, heaven forbid.
Yeah, so anyway, I've got an HDMI cable. I've actually got it going to. I was having some trouble earlier, because I haven't tested this in a little while, and I was setting it up just before the stream. I actually had trouble getting, at least, I want to say I hooked it up directly to my HDTV before. So I don't know why I wasn't getting a picture. I said mode not compatible. I mean, remember, this is a prototype. It actually comes from the Netherlands. So, I mean, I'm sure they're you know, testing it with various TV modes and stuff before the final thing, which I don't really know what their time frame on actually
releasing. It's been in development for a long time.
It has been at least 2 years. They did a Kickstarter about 2 years ago. It actually didn't get funded, but they're working on other ways of bringing this out. I'm going to switch to FrameMeister's second input.
We are probably the only ones to ever stream this.
You think? This thing? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. At least on YouTube Gaming.
Probably. I mean, I'm sure they maybe streamed, the people who are making it. Maybe stream some themselves. But anyway, I was able to get display correctly through the FrameMeister. Whoa, that's loud.
That's really bumping.
Yeah.
Okay. And I should be going through to the stream pretty good. Now, obviously, it looks a little squished. That's what these buttons are for. In actuality, if I push this button, this toggles between wide modes. I am not entirely sure why the wider one is correct when I'm putting it through the FrameMeister, because when I was testing it straight to my TV, making it go wide made it go too wide.
Well, you'll have to set the... I mean, you're just doing pass-through. So it shouldn't.
I'm actually not doing pass through because I was having trouble with the modes.
Right, you got to force it to
the modes that it was going through. So I do need to, before I send this off to the next person, I do need to figure a few more things out about it. But yeah, so you know that basically this is for mainly for if you wanted to fill the whole screen, which again is stupid, obviously. But no, I'm not gonna say it's stupid. It flip your own boat, but I don't want that.
Why would you stretch the base resolution?
Yeah.
It hurts me to no end when I see people playing Mega Man X and they stretch it from 4x3 to 16x9 to fill the whole canvas.
Some people just like it. I mean,
I just kind of lean in and go, dang, Mega Man, you gained some weight.
So this other red button on the side, I click it. This is probably not the best scene for previewing these different color palettes, but it toggles through a variety of color palettes, and some are actually pretty good. I mean, all I can say is looking at this on my HDTV, it is extraordinarily sharp.
You have to go with the... the puke green.
Yeah, I think there is one. There's actually a bunch. Like, I kind of like that faded one right here, actually.
That kind of natural, almost sepia tone.
This one is pretty authentic, I would say. There's actually a there are.
Oh yeah, I guess
there's a lot of them actually. I see some weird, I don't think you're going to be able to see it on the stream, but on certain color palettes, there is a little bit of weirdness along the higher contrast edges. Like on this one, between the dark blue and the light blue, it does not, there's like a one pixel wide vertical line along those edges, but it doesn't. Most color palettes don't have any issues like that. And I don't know if it's just like too sharp for the TV or really what's going on with that. All right, let's see. I kind of like that. Is that supposed to be a... I mean, it's more brownish than green, but I feel like that right there is pretty close. So I'm going to go with that. There might be another more accurate one, but let's go with it.
That looks about right. Sorry, I'm waiting for stream to catch up.
Yes, I was gonna say. I think it looks the one you have it on right now that I'm seeing on stream right now.
Well, I've actually started moving Kirby. So if you see Kirby,
yeah.
Moving,
so you're on the sepia tone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a greenish brown. It works, I think.
Kind of a baby
best
of
both
worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it maybe takes a few liberties with the exact puke greenness of the original.
Currently, the HDMI boy is running off of batteries.
Yes.
Which he's not sure if it's an unintended feature or if it's going to be like that in the final product, too.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a AC adapter, but... I've always been skeptical of playing original Game Boy with the AC adapter. Like, I've always been like, is that really what
they're
supposed
to do? Overload it with a voltage thing and press the battery. Gonna explode.
Like, I know there's like probably no reason to actually believe that there's something wrong with it, but I remember when a friend of mine had one as a kid. Like, I was just like really skeptical of it, and I've just never quite been able to let that go.
I fried out a monitor using an incorrect HDMI splitter before. It caused my entire TV to smoke.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I was using I think it was an eTech City HDMI splitter, and I paid like $20-something for it, and I guess they included the wrong voltage adapter. I plug in the HDMI things, and I'm like cycling through the ports, not getting any picture, and then I look up because I smell something, and I just see smoke coming off the back of my TV.
Well, and one reason...
Did they do anything to, like, help you replace it or anything?
Nope. No, they did not.
They said that they weren't liable for that and that they packed all the essentials needed for the device. So,
oh, man.
Gotta love it.
Another reason I decided just run off of batteries is because I am not sure what region of Game Boy this is and if there's any
issues. Like power discrepancies with... Yeah, that's...
I have no idea.
Sir. Oh, yeah, that's right, because if it's a European voltage adapter, that...
I mean, it's possible that the... It's I would say probable. I mean, I'm no
especially
expert.
Especially a portable system that's...
Yeah, I'm no expert on...
I wouldn't mess with it.
Yeah, I'm no expert
better
on...
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I'm no expert on power stuff, but... You know, like, the GameCube is kind of cool. I mean, and for all I know, this might be common, but, you know, since I've got that PAL GameCube in my possession that I'm borrowing still for the Game Boy episode.
Working on it.
Once I do the Game Boy episode, I'm going to, like, get rid of so much stuff.
Just like your shelves are going to be barren and you'll feel empty and just be like, no, come back. Wait. Castle Lololo?
Yeah.
Is that really the name of the level?
Have you never played the original Kirby?
I have never played the original. The first Kirby I played was the NES one.
Okay. Well, are you aware of the whole Adventures of Lolo and Kirby connection thing?
I am not. No.
Are you familiar with Adventures of Lolo?
I am not.
It's actually kind of a complicated series because there is this character that I'm actually fighting right now, this mini boss. His name is Lolo. And actually, they call him Lololo and La 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 in Kirby. But some old games that Hal made for the NES are called Adventures of Lolo. There's three of them.
Oh, this character. NES. No, I know this one.
Yeah, and the in Japan, the series is called Eggerland. And I might be mistaken on this, but I want to say that the Japanese games and the American games are completely different.
I would not be surprised.
There might be some, or they might reuse, they might like sort of mix levels from one or the other between versions. But Eggerland is most of the games in that series are completely different. I actually have one of them for the Famicom Disk System.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of the series. They're like overhead, like single screen puzzle games. Like I'm a really big fan of like puzzle games where you actually are like controlling a character, like rather than just like abstract blocks or whatever. I guess why I like Wario's Woods so much is because you're like actually, you know, it's you know a Tetris-esque puzzle game, but you're controlling a character in the playing field. It's just like kind of you like sort of just like figure out how to get out of the room. Basically.
Escape the room.
Yeah, like you have to collect like all the things.
I don't really care for it that much. I've only played the first one though. It's good music.
Oh, yeah, except the music is it's the same tune throughout the whole game.
The entire
so
game, yeah.
I've never thought like, of music like as the series strong point.
You know, to like if we're gonna
the song is good.
But yeah, so that's a series that came before Kirby, and so
music.
Whoa, 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 and la la la.
Hello.
Make
you got like a crazy. Your voice was
suddenly
distorted there.
I know.
Yeah.
I'll try toning down the YouTube stream. See if I can't save some data here.
But
I 720V2. I turn mine down a bit too. Switch the 240.
I don't feel any lag on this whatsoever. Like, this is really good.
It's gotta be just, like, you know, direct.
Yeah, I mean, most of these HDMI-type mods, you know, tout no added input lag. I mean...
The only lag that you're gonna get is from your display.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just the whatever is inherent in making that display, or any of those issues. So it's not to say you won't experience input lag, but the device itself is not at fault. But I feel nothing here. Like, it feels great. I mean, the downside is obviously, you can't play Game Boy Color, you can't play Game Boy Advance. It would be nice if they make a version that would do those things, but I'm sure making it work with an original Game Boy is probably simpler.
Yeah. Small mint to whoever figures out how to make a micro HDMI out for the 3DS.
Yeah.
Because when that happens, oh man, you know so many people are going to be all over that.
I would throw money at you.
Shoot, I already have a capture board and a controller mod. You throw an HDMI out on that, and I have a home console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, heck, that's what I think of the PSP Go as, you know? It's like, I turned that into a micro console. Like, you can sync up a DualShock 3 to it, component output, use the profiles that, I mentioned the Pixel Pierce earlier, actually also sent him my PSP Go, and he made these perfect PSP profiles, which are so cool because they actually fill the entire, like, he can do an, I'm not sure exactly what the scale is off the top of my head, but
it's a perfect
scale. It's a perfect integer scale for the PSP resolution to fill a 1080p HD TV. It's like so surreal to look at a PSP game filling an HD TV. Because
and it looks a lot better than the PSTV.
Yeah, in my opinion, it does. Like,
I need to get my hands on that profile then, because I've been struggling with trying to get my PSP to look good.
Are you familiar with the Pixel Purist?
I am vaguely familiar, only through name because of you guys.
Yeah, just Google search Pixel Purist, and it'll take you to his website, and you can download all these profiles that he's created, and they're integer scales, so they're all in most cases that means it is a 4x that won't cut anything off, or a 5x that will cut a little off. But
there we go. I have no idea what's going on there.
What's wrong?
Suddenly it kind of decides to.
Oh, is Skype my Skype flaking out on you guys?
It was, a little bit, yeah. We missed, everything you said about the computers.
But, yeah, I mean, so just look for
those.
If
you go there and download his profiles, they're very good.
He's got a readme that explains, I need to ask him more details on this, because sometimes he says, recommended screen space, -1 or something like that.
I think that's your TV scale.
I don't even think I have a -1 setting. Got Pixel
Perfect.
Well,
they're called different things.
The profiles that recommend to have your screen space on a certain thing, it doesn't look bad on my TV when I don't do that. I just ignore that.
I see I use the PlayStation TV, Miguel. I think it's pretty good.
It's as good as you're going to get for Vita games, but...
Yeah. Well, certain Vita games.
The few that will work.
it's basically your Persona 4 Gold Machine.
Sadly. Apparently, there are hacks, I believe, to...
Well, there was. They've moved it now. It seems like they should just enable it at this point, because the system's dead.
Yeah.
Pretty much. They should just enable it.
I mean, the important thing is before it died.
Salsetta works now, which is huge. Now it's now it's a Persona 4 and Ease Salsetta.
Ease Salsetta not working out was the worst thing.
Yeah.
Now I just wish the Uncharted game would work, because that game is a lot better than most people will give it credit for.
Yeah. I wish I would use my PSTV more. I actually ended up bypassing most of the PSP games I wanted to get, and instead of playing them on my normal PSP because I couldn't get the picture to look even remotely acceptable for my tastes, ended up getting a PS3 that's jailbroken and made forced remasters of most of the games I wanted to play.
Yeah,
and they look brilliant. They really do.
Yeah, the those you'll like those profiles for.
Yeah, you might be surprised.
Looking good on your stream. I mean, even Corey uses them, even though he doesn't like you say you play on PVM. You know, Corey does the same.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I use my PVM sometimes, but I primarily am looking at my FrameMeister for playing as well as
just because it makes most sense for your setup.
Yeah, my PVM is small. I don't have it like convenient to where I can really look at it. Up close, it just works well for my setup. But yeah, it fills a 16:9 HDTV, and it looks freaking great in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna look into this.
He's got some other cool profiles too. You know, I think the only major ones that he's missing right now is like Saturn, TurboGrafx-16, and Neo Geo. Pretty much has like everything else.
That's totally fine because I have. I'm good. I don't use any of those consoles. It's funny. I grew up mostly on Nintendo and PlayStation. I actually kind of missed Sega almost entirely.
I mean,
Do you stream a lot of Sega stuff or not really?
Not especially. I have a Dreamcast. It's just I don't have anything for games for it right now because I just got it like a month and a half ago and I haven't exactly had money for new games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm planning on doing more Sega games when I get some Dreamcast titles, and if it, you know, interests me enough, I might go the route of getting a Genesis and a Saturn and some of those older consoles to add to my setup, but I don't exactly have the space at the moment.
Yeah, I had very limited exposure to Sega stuff until they started releasing some stuff like on the GameCube, because I grew up almost exclusively Nintendo, and then I like begrudgingly started buying, you know, PlayStation systems. And I like PlayStation now, but at the time I was like, I just want to buy Nintendo systems. But
that's exactly how I was with my family. I tried to convince my family to get a GameCube back when it was the GameCube and PlayStation 2 race. And we went PS2, and rightfully so, because, hey, a DVD player, and that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. But, The Wii Virtual Console was in a lot of ways my first like super major exposure to Sega stuff. And I started dabbling in it a bit and found a few games I really liked. But I still thought there like wasn't like much of a compelling reason for me to own an actual Genesis. But I, you know, once I got into RGB, I finally was like, okay, I'm going.
Because it was easy.
Yeah, it was so easy to do RGB with the Genesis. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give the real Genesis an actual shot. And, you know, I've been surprised. Like, I've bought a lot of games that I never thought I would have, or games that I didn't even know about that are actually... Like, I didn't even know about Rocket and I Adventures when... I knew about Sparkster, but I didn't know that that was, like... I know Rocket and I Adventures was that Sparkster character. I didn't know what he was, other than an opossum. And I was like surprised, like I was like tied for my favorite game on the system. And the only two games I really wanted to play on Genesis was Contra Hardcore and Castlevania Bloodlines, because to me those were like the lost Contra and the lost Castlevania.
Because those are the series you were interested in.
Yeah, and they aren't those two games aren't on Virtual Console, and so that I was like, okay, these are there was no
which is mind blowing even now.
Yeah, like it's crazy that they never came out there. They never got in any compilations or anything, and so I just really wanted to play those, and so that's why I got Genesis. But then I thought that was like going to be it. But yeah. I've been surprised. I've bought a lot of Genesis games I never thought I would.
That's kind of how I felt about getting my SNES, because originally I didn't want to have more than four consoles in my setup. And the big reason for that was just too much space, too many cables, because at the time I was running everything through composite, so I had these gigantic RCA composite switchers with the Medusa head of cables behind my TV. I called it old fire hazard. But one of the big things is that I just didn't want to keep adding these consoles, and I was just like, eh, I won't have any need for them. But once I got a Super Nintendo, thanks to my friend Pedro here, I ended up just becoming a console purist to the point where I have 14 consoles wired into this setup.
Yeah, it...
It's funny.
It gets addictive. Like, once you, like, start breaking down those barriers of, like, those systems that you never previously owned, and then you start dabbling in other systems, like, I never would have dreamed that I'd own a Saturn. It was given to me. And then, so once you start getting that stuff, it's like, oh, now I may as well just basically get everything.
It's accessibility. For me, it was like growing up until, I want to say 2012, actually, the only consoles I had in my setup were an N64, my PS2, and my GameCube. And I had maybe 15 games for my 64 and then 3 each for the other two systems. So I didn't have a whole lot of games. I did mostly PC stuff. And, I mean, once I got a PS3, which I never dreamed of owning, it was just like, wow, I guess now I can try all this stuff and see what's so great about it instead of being jaded and angry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was very much the same way about Sega.
I'm just kind of watching this game. It's like, why is Kirby picking up other Kirbys?
Why does he have to destroy them?
Yeah, they blow up. I have no idea what's going on here.
And why does destroying that Kirby annihilate everybody? What future has he created?
Before they make Kirby such like a nice guy. Or nice it.
Well, now,
nice
but thing. You know, they have to market him as being, you know, angry for America.
Yeah. Well, this is before that.
To be fair, in the latest one, I mean, he's not very nice. Kirby's actually kind of a badass, not gonna lie.
I am so excited to play that.
Like, okay, Triple Deluxe, one of my biggest issues with it was that when you went through Triple Deluxe and you reached the sections with Hypernova, it slowed the game down. One thing I'm really big about is game pacing, and that's something I always criticize in a lot of the games I play is, why was that segment there, and why did it disrupt the pacing that we had going?
Now, I could definitely understand that. Like, Return to Dreamland kind of has the same issue with the Mega Sword and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I like the Hypernova more than the Mega Powers. But I definitely see your point with that.
It felt to me like they put arbitrary, really drawn out puzzles in a lot of cases just to extend the game's longevity.
But I mean, I really liked Triple Deluxe. I mean, like overall, I feel like it's in the top three Kirby games because no Kirby game will be as good if it doesn't follow the superstar formula. Then it simply.
That's what I was building to, and I actually, it's funny that you say that Triple Deluxe is in your top three, because after you play Planet Robobot, it'll be knocked out.
Oh, it'll probably go to four, because, I mean, it is so baffling to me why they didn't just, like, Sakurai made this, like, perfect formula for Kirby with, like, I mean, it's the template for Smash Brothers. It really is, like with all the complex move sets that every single power has.
Yep.
Like, why did they revert to that for, you know, the next decade and a half? And why do we
Why did we have to wait till Kirby 64 to get the duality of powers, which even then was horrendously limited?
Yeah, I mean, it's just It just plays so much. Like, they did all of these things that, like, the games were good, but it's just like, but you're making a game that is inherently not as good as Superstar because
they're not sticking to, like, they're not using the formula.
They're not using the formula because
you know what else is like that? Ratchet and Clank was like that.
Oh, I feel so bad for Ratchet and Clank. Both in terms of its latest game release and its movie release, because
I thought the new one, like the remake, was really good. The movie though.
The remake was good, like the game was good. The bad part about the movie was that the movie wasn't well received by critics or viewers, and it's probably its biggest nail in the coffin is Zootopia, because it released pretty much
right
same time as Zootopia, so
it could have done better.
The thing that amazes me
released
about
a lot earlier, honestly, it missed a really big window.
Like in January, it probably would have done good.
Yeah,
it's definitely. Too bad because like I like the series. I mean, I like the main games. It just they screwed around for so long with games that are not what anybody wanted.
Yeah,
like a style of what, game that they're
what
like
amazing.
Into the Nexus one and stuff like that.
Well, Into the Nexus was kind of a return to form, but it was so short.
Yeah.
The thing that amazes me about Ratchet & Clank is that it like still exists because I love the series. I actually didn't get into it until the PS3. And the gameplay it is just so good, I think, like in the basic core games. It just amazes me because I feel like, you know, you look at E3 and all right now, and it's like no one is making these like, you know, sort of family friendly-ish games anymore, like except Nintendo. Like, it's all about...
Except Playtonic.
Yeah, but
ukulele.
They're making one... And lots of indie games, you know, have the colorful, you know, nice whole thing to them, but it just amazes me because I feel like there's hardly anything else like it on PlayStation anymore, and it surprises me that there's still an audience for it aside from me on that platform. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like all the, you know, the all that stuff, all the modern, you know, M-rated stuff too, but it's all that now.
After a while, you just want something that's a little bit more simple. You don't want all of the weight of a really overbearing storyline or some dark brooding character.
Yeah, and you know, it just seems like you have to play games on Nintendo system to get that anymore.
Yeah,
and so that's why I think Ratchet and Clank is a nice anomaly, and I don't know why it still exists, but I'm glad it does.
I feel like one of the big things about Ratchet and Clank is that it maintained its own type of charm, and the studio that made it managed to just do good enough to scrape by each game, and I feel like that's definitely benefited them because they really do fill a valuable niche on these consoles. Yeah. On the PlayStation console especially, which is so, at least in my opinion, barren of any titles that are devoid of serious weight to them, because you have Destiny and Bloodborne and Until Dawn. It's just like, wow, can we get a frickin' second to breathe?
Hey, you beat it.
Yeah, my memory was it being at least slightly longer than this, so let me look for another game to play.
Did you start at the beginning of the game?
Huh?
Did you start at the beginning of the game?
Yeah, it doesn't save. There is a hard mode, but...
Right, but that was...
It's really short. The original Kirby is really short.
Yeah, original Kirby is like probably a 40-minute game if you do it right.
I mean, I think I was playing it for less than that. I was playing for probably like
30 minutes, 35 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea
on this game. Short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no powers.
Oh God, that's right. There are no powers in this one.
Yeah, this was. I mean, I never owned this game until just a couple of years ago because, several of my friends had it, and even though I really enjoyed it, like it was just like so easy, and I just beat it on their own Game Boys, and I was like, well, I don't want to waste my money buying a game that I've already beat. So, but you know, I'm a huge Kirby fan.
Someone is requesting Ninja Gaiden for the Game Boy, Ninja Gaiden Shadow.
I wish I had it. I saw it for really cheap a month or so ago, and I kind of should have got it. It wasn't in great condition, but it was a pretty low price for that game. I do want to get it sometime because it does look pretty good.
Do you have DuckTales for the Game Boy?
I do not.
Oh man,
I don't.
Goodie.
I don't have like a whole ton of. I've got 30 some Game Boy original Game Boy games.
I don't have a whole lot, just 30.
Yeah.
There's a request for Super Mario Land 2.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. Let me go grab that.
Someone's recommending Ninja Gaiden. Here I am recommending Mario Land. I thought you were going to say, I'm not recommending Ninja Gaiden, I'm just telling you to play it. We will be doing a Neo Geo RGB video, and it does do RGB by default, but there are some considerations. That was actually supposed to happen sooner, but I feel like all these RGB episodes have just like gotten pushed back or shuffled around so much that it's almost like difficult for us to plan ahead, because we have to we pretty much decide on an episode and that's what we're going to do.
Luigi Superstar Saga, I wish. Missed opportunity, Nintendo. You're Luigi too late. Although I will say, Dream Team was good for probably the first two or three worlds, and then it just started to get really stale.
I feel bad because I'm like, you know, a huge Mario fan. I love the RPGs, but whoa.
What?
Why is it gigantic?
Did you hit the zoom button?
It was...
Whoa.
And why is it not loading? Well...
You broke it.
It happens at least once a stream. Oh my gosh, that's some big text.
Yeah. It went back to normal size, but it's actually... It's not even...
It's not booting the game.
Not booting the game.
Oh no.
Let's see what we got here.
The Game Boy Advance SP that
it's did broke.
Something
are you happy bad. Now?
Oh, there it is. I guess it just didn't read it.
Just kind of throwing this out there to the chat. Did anybody in the chat get their HD Retrovision component cables?
Oh yeah.
I know that they shipped out to the backers like the last couple of weeks.
Couple of my friends got them and hooked them up to their FrameMeister, and they're really happy that they don't have to do SCART RGB.
Oh, yeah, that's a good workaround for sure.
The only
those
thing
guys
they
are
need...
going to be on stream, I think, like maybe right like the week after Too Many Games. When we have the opportunity to use like their stream with their cables.
Yeah, because we do not have the font cables.
No,
because they had to send them to backers first, and you know take stock of what they have left.
The moment those go on commercial sale, I'm snatching up three pairs.
Yeah, just have like some
I forgot how obnoxious the pause screen is in this game with the flashing colors.
Like epilepsy warning.
Like why did they decide to do that?
I keep people interested, probably.
Yeah.
This game's a little tedious. Look at the screen.
It is not my favorite Mario game, that's for sure. It's okay.
I like the first one more.
Yeah, I like the first one more too.
This game looks really good though for a Game Boy game. I remember first seeing it and thinking like, wow, I can't believe that
this is a Game Boy game.
Yeah, I mean, the sprites are huge. Really?
They really are. It fills the screen nicely, and the HUD at the bottom feels really good.
Yeah. I mean, the HUD is, like, exactly the same as the last one. Like, that's the only thing that even, like, looks like the last one.
What's weird is that, like, it feels like this game tries to be closer to what console Mario is, but the fact that it's still just got all these weird things in it is, like...
Yeah.
It's super. It looks super floaty.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is. Oh, and Game Boy games, I feel like tend to be. I don't know why, but
right, like they're just like, oh, you know, whatever. Kids will like a little bit more time to react.
Yeah, I mean, it might be partly because it's such a small screen that
maybe when it's scaled up, it just looks slower.
Yeah, and maybe
this came out after Mario World, obviously.
Yeah,
it uses a lot of the.
Yeah, it's got the spin attack and stuff like that.
So there's a pretty large gap in between Mario Land 1 and Mario Land 2, like the release.
Yeah. I mean, at the time this came out, I probably liked it more than Mario Land 1, but in retrospect, Mario Land 1 is just, I don't know, to me it's just kind of more unique.
Yeah, it has a great soundtrack.
Yeah, fantastic soundtrack.
The 8-1 SCART RGB switch?
Yeah, the...
The G-SCART.
Yeah. You know, it has... put 8 SCART cables in, and it has 2 outputs.
Okay, I was about to say, if it has 2 outputs, I'm sold, because that sounds pretty spectacular.
Well, it's got...
It is a little expensive, but it, I mean, they are available through, you can order them on a page on RetroRGB.com. They're a little expensive. They're like $200, because they're like, they make them in batches of 100, I guess, is what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And like once they get 100 orders, and they send them for manufacture.
So the last person waits a lot less time than the first person, but it's worth it. It's totally worth it. The second output is a VGA port, but you can turn it into RGBS.
Yeah, so you can run like a.
Straight to your PVM.
It's actually funny you mentioned that. I actually have a RGB D-sub to SCART cable that I got made through Retro Cable or Retro Console Accessories, so
I could use that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to custom order it because I was using it for the X Select, but it didn't end up working out due to the frequency shift.
Okay.
So I could use the cable for that same thing.
Or if you wanted to like go to your PVM with it, you could go just get a... like a D-sub to 4 BNCs, like a RGB in sync.
Oh, yeah.
And just like that's what we do.
Yeah.
We just go into our PVMs with that. Then the other, then the regular SCART output just goes to our frame risers.
Can that...
You can see on my segment of the tour video, I pretty thoroughly show how I have it hooked up. Though I skip over some parts because we're going to save it for later.
Does the G-SCART generate enough power to power a sync strip on SCART cables?
It has its own built-in sync strip.
Really? Okay, because I actually have the cables that I got from WookieWeen, the SCART to BNC cables. Mm-hmm. I actually had to have a custom cable made with a 5-volt adapter to power the sync strip because my Bambridge SCART box is the one that doesn't power a sync strip because it doesn't have the correct wiring.
Is that the automatic one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have a manual one, I just didn't know.
Yeah, the automatic one, he actually figured out how to make a cable for it. Basically, he takes like an old 5-volt phone charger and wires it in so that you basically have an external power for your sync strip on the cable.
Okay.
So that's how I'm able to use mine right now. It's just I'm running low on SCART ports.
Yeah, so the way I did our marathon this weekend, we so that, you know, we could have more than one game going on at a time, I had one person playing on the PVM, which was going through the FrameMeister and to one capture card, and then
the Retron
was for the other, whoever was playing on the HD TV, and I was going to another capture card. So the only reason I was able to make that work with as few screens as I did was because of the two outputs of the G-SCART. That meant I could basically, systems that were running through the FrameMeister, I could dedicate them as PVM, even though they're running through the FrameMeister. You know how it works because you watch on a PVM. So that's unusual for my setup, with the PVM being the primary. But I really didn't have to change much to make it work. So
that's lucky. When I got my PVM, I had to overhaul my entire setup because I had to move all of my audio equipment. I had to move all of my monitors, all of my consoles, all of my scalers and split boxes. And it became a point where I had to make the PVM the center of my setup and then work my way backwards.
Well, that's what I did at first, but now...
It sucks to do that, but it's also, like, really fun. rebuild your setup.
The problem with my setup is that I live in California where we frequent triple digits, and this studio does not breathe.
So
for me it was just like I would have had more fun with it if it wasn't, you know, 95 to 100 in my studio and I'm sitting here sweating holding a large CRT like where am I gonna put you?
But I temporarily when I got my PVM I for brief time, I had it pass out of there, but with the G-SCART, it's like, well, I may as well just use the two outputs of the G-SCART. And, you know, so that, in some ways, that does make it more flexible, because in the future, I can use the output of the PVM to go somewhere else. I don't have a use for that right now, but I can. So, I mean, just like Corey, I mean, Corey's got... like nine screens that any game in his setup can go to. Am I exaggerating, or is it actually nine screens?
They can play games.
They can play a game from your main console setup.
Oh, like in the entire attic.
In your entire attic. They're already connected.
It's like seven.
I knew it was nine or seven.
One wow. Others. But I mean, I don't like. It's just like a lot of the CRTs are just hooked up in a way. Like,
yeah, they're like.
It's just like to optimize for to like to make making the show as easy as possible. Like, if I need to show things from a different source, you know, it's just like certain things it's that
optimized
I
optimize like, oh, for like your clusters of consoles.
Yeah, but I mean, also just to like make the show as like easy as possible. Because, like, you know, we do so much like testing and stuff. I don't want to make a mess every time I do it and like pull everything apart. And it still like kind of happens, but I try to like it's not as bad as it used to be because everything's just like hooked up in a different way.
By the way, for dang it, why can I not make that jump? For the HD Game Boy here, the like you said, Mike, the there have been some shown that you have an NES controller port, but this this one has a Super Nintendo port, and the you know it would be nice for Game Boy games using a Super Nintendo controller. I always use the Type A on the Super Game Boy, and this is. B jump, Y is B is A.
Oh, weird.
Which, you know, but you can hold your fingers at the more comfortable.
See, that's how I like it.
Yeah.
That's how I like it.
Like, if you're playing an RPG, I would prefer A to be A and B to be B, but for an action game like this, I think it's much better to have B on Mario World style controls. You know, shoot is on Y, jump is on B.
I just have large hands, so having it closer to the outside feels nice, because otherwise I'm just going to, you know, clip everything. It's part of the reason why I got the controller mod for, like, my 3DS, because anytime I played any game, I would accidentally hit every button at once, because my thumb could hit every button at once.
That's crazy. I had no idea that there was a controller mod for the 3DS. That's pretty great.
It's a little bit janky, to be honest with you, but I love it. The way that
what does it look like on the system? Is it possible for you to hold it up to the camera?
It's right here.
Oh, you're already doing it. I was looking at the actual stream.
So the way that this works in here, I'll get a light for this really quick. But the way that it works is there's a little port added on the side there, and I don't know if you can see that notch right there at the bottom.
You need to hold it up a little bit more. Okay, it's just like it looks almost like a volume slider or something.
Yeah, a little bit. It's it feeds out to one of these style cables.
Okay.
These little pitchfork styles plugs in there, which feeds out to the female end of any type of controller you want. This controller mod is universal. You just need to get the adapter from Katsukitty, and you could use a PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, SNES, NES. I got the GameCube one personally since it's most suited for the 3DS. Mm-hmm. And then all I do is I plug in that cable into the 3DS itself, and it basically makes it work like the Circle Pad Pro, makes it so that your GameCube controller overrides every function of your 3DS. And GameCube controller is A, B, X, and Y natively, so it all works out.
Right. That's great.
I think the best part about it, though, is there's also a controller input that you can use for this that activates a Circle Pad Pro function. So you can use, say, the C stick as your second control stick for compatible games.
Oh, okay.
So it makes games like Monster Hunter, Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, all of those games that have that three-dimensional camera panning, mm-hmm. so much more comfortable.
Thunderblade on Sega 3D Classics.
Oh, sorry.
I was always just really surprised that that game uses the extra stick.
Extra control stick.
It would work, though. Go up and down. That's cool. I mean, it's something I would like to do at some point. Like, I know that Tri is looking to get the video capture on a DS.
Well, I mean, I do want to do it on both eventually, but the DS is not very expensive.
One, are you going through Katsu for that, or are you?
I don't think they have one. There's only one that I've seen.
I think Katsu does DS Lite.
Really?
If I recall correctly, I remember seeing them with a DS Lite capture board a while back. I don't know if they still do it.
There's an American source that does it on DS Fat, the original DS.
Oh, yeah, like the big one that actually fits the GBA carts comfortably.
Right. And that was, I mean, the GBA capture was the main, I mainly am just like curious to try it for, GBA, like mainly right now, my immediate curiosity for it is the Game Boy capture for our Game Boy episode. How well does it work for that purpose? I don't know. I am curious if it would work on, if there is a DS Lite version of it though. I might want to change my mind. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. I'll look at that. I've looked on that website before, like Katsukitty, and then there's some American site that it's not a very robust looking website. But,
Loopy,
huh?
Loopy, or are you talking about the regular DS mod?
Just the video capture. What are you talking about? I'm confused.
I'm just talking about 3DS capture in general, since that's what Katsu does primarily.
Yeah.
There's only two sources for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, as far as I know. I wish, the HD Retrovision guys, Stee, from that crew, he actually made I don't know if it was composite video, but he made some sort of video capture for the DS. He like had a board like not USB, like video.
Oh my god.
But it was it connects to this gigantic board, and he said it was never intended to be an actual
commercial release
product. It was just something he was making for just really, I think, maybe even as part of a class he was in at the time. So he has no ambitions to turn that into a real thing, but I would love for someone to make like an actual video mod, not a capture, a video mod for those systems.
What I would love to see is somebody, because like what I've seen so far is there's two people who do 3DS capture mods, and that's Katsukitty and Loopy, and your trade-offs are this. If you go with Katsukitty, one, Katsukitty is known for taking forever. It took me 6 months to get this controller mod. I sent it in January and got it back last week.
Wow.
So it takes a minute. Two, Katsu also costs a little bit. It cost me about $180 to get this controller mod. And then I paid about $550-ish for the 3DS plus the capture board because I just bought a whole new unit. The other 3DS capture person is Loopy. And Loopy does boards that are, in my opinion, of far better quality than Katsu's. The downside is he only does tiny 3DS. He doesn't do XLs or new 3DS, which Katsu does.
Here, let me. I don't know if I can. Can I drop a well? I'll just drop it in Skype here. I don't know if this is the Loopy you're talking about. I'm going to send you a link in Skype here. This is.
Yep, that's Loopy.
Okay, that is what. So you actually think that is? I mean, like I say, it's not a very robust website, but you think it's actually kind of higher quality.
Oh no, Loopy's capture boards are good. Let me just say that
good.
They are really good. I have friends who use Loopy boards, and they've been brilliant. Like, they've been absolutely brilliant. I'm actually a little bit impressed by the video quality, especially. I don't know if it's a difference in the viewer program or not, or maybe it's just the way that the viewer program handles the pixels between Katsu and Loopy's, but Loopy's viewer program has a slightly more crisp image to it, and I have to do a little bit of post-processing on Katsu's viewer program to get comparable results.
Interesting.
Oh, wow. So, okay, so, well, I'll, that gives me some encouragement to use him for the DS capture, because I actually recently bought, it was only like $25, and it's in good shape, I bought a fat DS, because I've got one, but I gave it to my dad like years and years ago, so he can play like solitaire on. He actually like plays it like every night before he goes to bed.
And you don't have another one?
He's worn down. No, I'm talking about like the fat model.
Right. You have like, but you
know, why would I have? Why would I have two of that one? I've got one of all the others. I've got one of each.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy in and of itself. But I do have one of each DS model. Like not all the variations, but I mean, you know, I've got a DS, a DS Lite, a DSi, and a DSi XL. Yes, it's stupid, but I do have all of those.
So Laxer in the chat is saying you have to install Loopy's DS Capture yourself?
He offers a installation service.
Okay.
That'll probably be easier, just have him do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have the capability to do that.
I wouldn't trust myself. I plain and simple, would not trust myself.
Yeah.
Do you do any modding yourself?
I did some light modding of audio equipment back in the day. I also did some console modding, like light soldering, but it was mostly to do like capacitor repairing, and that's really simple. So no, I don't have the steady hands for it. Plus, I had an accident in 2009 in which a rock hit my right eye and took away my depth perception for about 5-ish years. So I'm still adjusting to getting depth back since I just got this fixed last year.
Wow.
Holy cow. So how did they fix it?
What happened when the rock hit my eye was it shattered the lens and scarred the surface layer of my eye, which is the cornea. And fortunately, the scarring cleared up, but the shattered lens remained, so I couldn't actually see anything through it besides just blurred, smeared messes. And so what they had to do is they had to cut open the sac that had the lens in it, suck out all the remnants of the lens, and then put in a fiberglass lens in its place. And then after that, I had to get laser corrective surgery to burn away some of the scar tissue on the back of the lens.
Wow, that's nuts.
It was pretty crazy. You could feel the laser visibly shooting into your eye. It was not a fun experience.
I was looking back at that comment that said about the installing yourself, and it says no soldering, just have to install ribbon cable and use some double side tape. So I guess if it came down to it, actually, I mean, if it's that easy, I don't know. I don't know if I want to open up a DS though.
I would honestly, I personally have almost broken parts of my DS trying to do a simple shell swap to get the
on mine. I've never really looked inside a handheld console, but I imagine they are so streamlined in their design. They have to be, you know, to have, it's, I mean, everything scary. Just fits just so, you know.
There's so many little parts, and at least with the 3DS, there were like a couple of like little film pieces and filler pieces that I almost lost and had fallen on the carpet that I freaked out about while trying to put it back together.
Yeah,
that, and there's a lot of delicate ribbon cables between the joints on the DS2, and in my experience, it's very easy to accidentally clip those when you're trying to wiggle something in there to pry the case off.
Yeah, I mean, heck, when I was, you know, I was like 14 or 15 or something. I tried to, I screwed up swapping buttons on Super Nintendo controllers. So, I mean, I don't know if I trust myself to mess inside DS. Of course, I think I'm a little better at now than I was then. But,
somebody in the chat is asking, do we think it would be possible to replicate the Y-Boy 64?
No.
I mean,
you don't think so? You don't think anybody could develop something like it?
You would need a custom N64 board that would need to be able to house all of the components of the Wideboy. And the Wideboy itself it's kind of weirdly designed in that there's no room for anything except its parts. Yeah. And so it would be really tedious to try and recreate that. And in addition to that, N64 reproduction carts are among some of the most difficult to produce amongst reproduction circles. GBA, NES, Super NES are all super basic in their construct, so that you can basically just load a custom ROM chip on there, solder it on, and bam, you have a custom reproduction cart. N64 carts are a little bit more complex, not only in the way that the games are processed, but also in their board structure as well, and the way that the pins are set up and in the exact design. It's not streamlined.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with some kind of FPGA configuration, I mean, I don't fully understand all the magic of what they can do, but I mean, we've seen some crazy things over the year. I mean, I'm drawing a blank on what it's called right now. The AVS Nintendo. I don't fully understand all the details, but I mean, as far as I understand, that is it is not a traditional clone console, but it is imitating the NES in an extraordinarily accurate way. I mean people might figure out a way to do this kind of stuff. It might not be true hardware, but
it'll be close.
Be pretty close. One thing I'm interested in testing out with the Wide Boy, I've got a Super Game Boy and Super Game Boy 2. Super Game Boy 2 is much more accurate than regular Super Game Boy. And I'm curious to see if the Wide Boy has the same speed as a Super Game Boy 2 for accuracy. I'm going to assume it probably does.
I'm interested just to see how the Wide Boy stacks up in just a lot of these comparison things, because the tech itself is, again, almost identical to that of the Game Boy Advance Player. The only difference is pretty much the way that it's shaped and also the way that it handles audio.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
But, I mean, the Wide Boy itself fundamentally is essentially a Game Boy Advance in an N64 cart.
Right.
Yeah. It's nuts. So,
and the big key to that is that it natively outputs 240p without having to mess around with anything.
It also has the exact same chip as the Game Boy Advance, like the exact same one on the interior. Same ones found in every starter Game Boy Advance model. So,
yeah. I mean, it is an interesting device, and I'm glad you gave me that tip about the Z button. That is
game changer, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a much closer look at some of the games I've already looked at. Now that I know that. So, yeah, you just tap it twice every time you turn it on.
Yep, and then you're set to go.
All right.
I'm also interested to see how that displays on... I want to see how the zoom handles on a PVM.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks bad.
Does it still look as bad?
Well, I mean, it looks bad because it... I can't remember exactly what it looked like when I tested it, but, I mean, those lines aren't going to line up. Each row, like, if you can't do an integer scale, if it's not an integer scale, it's not going to line up, you know, with the scan lines on the thing. So I can't imagine how it could possibly look good.
I know, just wishful thinking. Maybe by some miracle, it'll do something that you don't expect.
I don't know. I'll double check, but it is an interesting device, so I'm excited to delve into it a little more.
The people asking about the Z button tip, the Wide Boy has a function, and it's kind of weird to explain, but I guess the way Tri put it earlier is probably the best. It's kind of like turning on a forced anti-aliasing effect with the Wide Boy, and what it does is it forces pixel clusters to kind of like push together into a solid form, so that each individual asset is discernible on the screen without being blurred out, but it doesn't scale correctly.
Yeah.
But when you tap the Z button twice and enter this mode, it realigns certain pixels on the screen that makes it produce a much more crisp image.
Yeah, I'll try it on the PVM with the toggling the different modes. I mean, maybe there was some sort of intent behind that. I don't know what it was, but we'll find out. Well, is that about wrap it up?
I think it's gonna. I know that you're
I'm exhausted. I'm looking forward to
Sleep.
Getting some sleep, but I got through the stream just fine, I think. I had some fun with some Game Boy games. Good times.
Good times indeed.
All right, well.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. This is a blast.
Yeah, thanks for letting us borrow the Wide Boy and for some of your tips on all this hardware. So,
no problem.
All right, well.
I'm probably going to get back to my own stream here in about 10 minutes, I think.
All right, well, good luck with that.
Thank you very much, guys.
And good night, everyone. We will see you. We'll have an episode this on coming Friday. Weekend. And we'll see you again on Sunday, next Sunday. Yep. All right.
All right.
It's not a YouTube stream. It's actually a Twitch cast, you guys. So.
Oh yeah.
You feel free to drop your Twitch channel name.
No problem. Hold on. I'm not joking. When I put this URL in here, it redirects to my Twitch channel. It is mike.sexy.
I don't know if it does the links work in our
chat. I tried to make it so that links work, but I have no idea why they don't. So it's mic.sexy.
Yep. mic.sexy.
It's like so easy. Like, nobody is going to forget that.
And the way that I do it is just like, are you looking for a good time? Do you want to get away from the world outside? Then just come to mic.sexy. We'll take your mind off things and give you the good time that you deserve.
Well, there you go. If you need another stream to go to after we're done here. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Right. See you next week.
Take care, guys. Later.